Yes, you are in now, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. I wonder the others that we left on the other link. They are all here. Let me check. The Deputy Minister Bapela was there. The DG, yes. DTA. It seems they are still there. And it's so unfair to them, honestly. This issue of links not spent on time. We have 10 people on the other side. And we are told we have not yet linked in. And we left the others there. Andy, can you
attend
to it?
Yes, Chairperson.
There are so many people who have logged in the other side. Because in all honesty, the link is sent to us now at a minute two. Some of the people logged in from 1:30. I know the deputy minister logged in there. It was 20 past. Colleagues, the others are in another link. Can we wait for them to join us? I've seen Dr. Anaidu, he was on the other link. The Deputy Minister Bapela was there, or he's here this side now again. But the DG is still in the other side. Dr. Kevin Naidu is a lot of people, more than 12 people on the other link.
No, we'll wait, we'll patiently wait for them, and we'll welcome them as they do. In our motion, it was given correctly.
Us, we've wasted our data since I've passed on the wrong link.
It's a sabotage.
Eh?
It's a sabotage. We are technologically challenged.
What technological challenge?
I'm saying all of us, the entire system, because it happened even in Scopa yesterday. I was waiting on the other meeting while the chair was proceeding on the other side.
Doctor, are you back? I have seen a lot of people on the other side. Let me see all of them today. The DM Bapela, why did you leave the other side? DM Bapela.
Honorable Olferman, how are you?
DM Bapela. It's only DM Mabella who has joined this other side. The rest are still on the other meeting. It means they are still waiting for the link.
Chairperson, the link has been sent to everyone, first of all, earlier today, and then just now it has been sent. This is after the IT department tinkered with our usual a login process.
Hello, Chair. I've just notified everybody that the new link will be sent to them. I've notified Honorable Groenewald, Honorable Hussein, and an Honorable Dr. Naidu.
Honorable Hussein is here. The people you were supposed to have notified, Brian, is Dr. Naidu, Kevin, the DG of Traditional Affairs. Who are the other people? Because myself and Honorable Kaiser, we are here. And the DM Bapela, I see he has logged in here too, unless somebody is doing it on his behalf.
So,
is it you?
Yes, it's me, Chair.
You see, he was on the other side as well. So the DM is on the other link.
Yes, I've just
notified. Was you also on the other link?
Yes, it was me on the other link as well, Chairperson.
Oh.
Yeah, I see that.
Didn't inform you, saw the meeting attendees of the other link. There were so many. There were more than 12.
Yes, Chair.
You remove me and, yeah, now Mr. Naidu is here now. I'm happy. the DG of Traditional Affairs, because he was attending the ad meeting with us, and Honorable Claire.
Yes, I'm also here, Jefferson.
With us, and Honorable Claire. Yeah. Are you here, the DG of Traditional Affairs? You are here?
Yes. Yes, Chairperson, I'm here.
You logged in earlier to a wrong meeting.
I'm here now. I'm
you
here now,
Chairperson. Got logged.
But there were other guests there. So those poor guests are waiting there in the other meeting. Brian, you were there. Can you try? Did you send everybody a message from that meeting? Tell them to check for the other link.
Yes, I've notified them subsequently after the DG of the Traditional Affairs also logged on, Chairperson. I'm just speaking to the DG in corporate governance as well. She's still logged on, and then it's 7 still logged on, so I'm still communicating with them, Chairperson.
Okay. But we need to start.
Chairperson.
You are here. I've seen you. I've seen you.
Thank you, Chair.
You are here. And then where's my mom Kize? She's not on the other net. Oh, she's here. Okay. I should think we need to start then.
Chair.
Yeah. Yes,
Chairperson. Good evening, Chairperson.
Is it Dr. Naidu? We need to start, ne?
Chair.
Yes, we need to start. We need to start the meeting.
Yeah.
Good evening, everybody. Hope this finds all of you well. We need to start with the meeting.
Chairperson.
Yes. Who's calling the chairperson? Like there was somebody calling the chairperson. Are we fine? Are we settled now? Is it you, Longi?
No, it's not me.
Okay.
Chair?
No.
Chair, it was Kevin Naidu. Oh, how are you, Dr. Naidu? Welcome. You were in a wrong meeting. You were in a wrong meeting. You are here now. It's good to have you decide this way. Okay, colleagues. I think we need to start. We need to start the meeting. We need to start the meeting. Good evening, colleagues.
Evening.
Welcome
all
to
good
the meeting. Yes.
Evening, Chair.
Okay. Mato is okay, and she has the right presentation, I suppose, today. Mato, do you have all the presentations?
No, it's Mom Kiza here, Chair.
I can hear it, you. I wanted to check with Mato.
Okay, Chair.
Yesterday's, last night's experience, to be sure that she has the right presentation.
Okay.
So you got, yes. I think let's start with the meeting, colleagues. And good evening to all of you. I think, welcome, Minister and Deputy Ministers. I would like to also convey.
Thank you very much.
Yes. By way of introduction, Minister, I think let me convey our gratitude and appreciation to you and the Minister Department. Also, we want you to note our support on your tireless work on the Disaster Management Act regulations, including your response to this COVID-19 pandemic. We are happy that you have managed to guide us through the 5th, the 4th, and soon on the 1st, we are going to the 3rd stage of the national lockdown. We also want to appreciate the opportunity you afforded for the public comments during the drafting of the regulation in preparation for the 4th stage of the lockdown. Regrettably, Minister, there was no such opportunity for us in respect to this latest regulation that are kicking on the 1st of June 2020. It's a matter that concerns all committee members, as it is not placing the committee in the best position to exercise its mandate. The consequences we represent expect us to have special insight and also provide guidance on these regulations. This is a justified expectation, colleagues, because we are the custodian of the National Disaster Management Act, and we too, we are also the lead committee on the National Assembly responsible for overseeing the implementation of this legislation and the associated regulations thereof. In many instances, we are failing to meet these expectations because we are not privy to the initial consultations. As a committee, we therefore feel strong that, along with business, labor, and any other key stakeholder, Parliament deserves to be at the forefront of the department's consultation processes. We cannot continue to come in at the tail end of the process, just like the ordinary public, and on the same hand, we're expected to provide informed leadership to our communities. Going forward, Minister, we urge the department and yourselves to get Parliament and the committee timely on board as we embark on consultation in preparation for the all remaining stages of the national lockdown. These two ministers will reaffirm our rightful place as well as the well-informed public representatives. And then we should also then, by so doing, we'll be also be equipping us well to provide our communities much needed leadership and guidance on the regulations. Today, we are also having another agenda item, of the municipalities that are currently under Section 139 of the Constitution. We know very well by now that there are serious problems with the application of Section 139 interventions. The perusal of the department's presentation before us today, it confirms that in many instances, the interventions are having no effect whatsoever in terms of improved outcomes, unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure and achievement on predetermined objectives. Yet money continues to be poured out on consultants and administrators. These are the key issues today we are going to attempt to address in this meeting. And then I think on that note, Minister, we have received calls from committee members. They are saying they are keen to interact with their presentation. So we have agreed that all your presentations should take 20 minutes. Then for each presentation, then the committee members will have 1 hour, 10 minutes to engage on the presentations. The good thing about it, they got the presentation on time, members. Though last night, post our meeting, based on the letter we got from the speaker, we requested the department just put that line in line with the speaker's request so that now that we're meeting with you today, we can process the matter and be able to respond to the speaker post this meeting. So I will hand over to you, Minister, and then to, I think what we'll do, we'll first deal with this item of the regulation first. Then you make the present. Yes?
It's Hussein, would you mind if I make a comment before you hand over to the minister?
Yes.
Chair, I wanted to just add my voice to the initial comments that you made in respect of some consultation or discussion with the Portfolio Committee prior to the Level 3 regulations. And I want to support the point that you made, Chairperson. But I also want to say this, Chair. I must be very honest in that as part of this Portfolio Committee, I think that this conversation that we're going to have today about the presentation of the Level 3 regulations, it's actually a wasted exercise if you think about it, because I've looked through the presentation from the department and there's nothing in there that we don't know already. We've got the regulations, we've seen it. Everything has already been in the media. And so, I'm not sure what the department's going to tell us anything different that's already there in the regulation. So the point I want to make is this, Chair. I honestly do feel that our minister, regrettably, is showing deep disregard for this Portfolio Committee. We asked, Chair, not on the first occasion, but in the least, this Portfolio Committee, across all political parties, could have at least had an opportunity to engage the minister on what the views are of this Portfolio Committee. The people who are represented in this Portfolio Committee are those who are speaking for people on the ground. You can't get anywhere else in South Africa, as I'm speaking to you now, where there are legally elected representatives of the people on the ground. And why the minister would not want to consult with those people is just, for me, just unbelievable. If the minister could see it fit to engage with labor, with business, with religious organizations, which is all good, and we must encourage more of that consultation. I'd really like to know from her, Chairperson, why is it that she chose not to at least get the views of this Portfolio Committee? And it's fine, she didn't have to present to us what she's already thinking if she's concerned that that might get out in the public domain, but at least show the courtesy to ask, what does this Portfolio Committee think in terms of what should be opened and what should be closed? And that, I think, is deeply disrespectful, Chair. And the reason why I take this position is because this is not the only incident. If you look at all of the questions, the written questions that we put to the minister, there is the standard response that we get from the minister that the information that the member requests is not available at the moment. You will know, Chair, I raised this matter months ago when we met in the House previously. And I took the minister on her word initially when she was appointed, and she said, she explained that if there is some difficulty, and she promised that she will deal with those questions. To this day, she hasn't dealt with those questions. The most recent written questions we put to the minister is that standard response is that the information is not available. Well, the minister has a record of doing that in the previous portfolio as well. And I'm really appealing to you, Chairperson, through you to the minister, to say that if you don't think that this Portfolio Committee has got a job to do, and if you're willing to show disrespect to this Portfolio Committee, then, Minister, you must expect the same in return. Because I make sure that we show you the greatest amount of respect when you come to this Portfolio Committee. I think that all of us have acted in a manner, we don't put our political parties first. We show you the greatest regard and greatest respect. And I don't think that you're doing the same to the elected representatives on this Portfolio Committee. I'd really like to hear your response to those comments. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
To you, Minister, and then you will then proceed to respond to the issues as raised, and then we will proceed, take it from there. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much. Do you want me to respond to Honorable Hussein first?
Yes.
Okay. First of all, let me say I do apologize. The consultations were led by the president. I do apologize for not coming to the committee. And next time I will come to, before we move to level two, I will ask for your views. Because what is put there is not a personal view, it's usually a view of the NC. But I will come next time and ask for your view before the NC, the NCCC, that it's, makes its decisions. So that I will do. But I want to say also that, one, I do respect the portfolio committee. I do respect the portfolio committee, and I do not deliberately not answer questions. If you look at the questions that I'm asked, the questions that I'm asked are not necessarily questions that are within our own scope. We get asked about questions about municipalities, about this, about this. I do not have information at hand about other spheres of government. I think we must, I must make that clear. If the question depends on another sphere of government, I don't have that information. I will have to source it. Just like any political party can ask in council what, sometimes I get asked questions like a tender in a municipality. How am I supposed to then give that response without having to take time and depending on whether the person I'm getting the information from responds and how long it takes to respond. So it's not out of respect of the portfolio committee. I must make that very clear. So I just wanted to put that on the table. When I'm asked questions that I can answer, I do answer.
Okay, Minister.
So I do want to put that on record.
But Chairperson, I'm afraid the Minister...
Honourable Minister is still on the
floor. I don't intend to...
Yes.
I'm sorry, Chairperson. It really is not my intention to interrupt the Minister, and I apologize, Minister, for that. But I'm afraid that the information you're giving us now is incorrect. Because just 2 weeks ago, I filed a question to you that asked the very straightforward question of how many cases that you are involved with at the moment during the lockdown. You personally as the Minister of COCTA, and that how many court cases where you are cited as a respondent. Now, that doesn't relate to other portfolios. It doesn't relate to other departments. It relates to you. It relates to your portfolio committee. And the standard answer you gave me was the information is not available at the moment. Surely that information is available. Because on each of these court cases that are being brought against you as the minister, the frontline minister in charge of the regulations, you must have briefed attorneys. You must have briefed our departmental lawyers. And yet you say you don't have that information available. I find that hard to believe, Minister. I can understand why you asked the question about a tender.
No, let me explain to you, Mr. Hussein, that if there is a court case, it doesn't come to me directly. It goes to the state law advisors. Sometimes I ask my department, I hear there is a court case about this matter. Where are the papers? And then sometimes they don't have it on hand. And not all the court cases, I'm the lead department. A lot of court cases have got different lead departments. So the state law advisors tend to inform first the people who are the lead department. For instance, there's a case recently I was dealing with, which is a case about education. I came to know from somewhere else that there is a case about education and I'm cited. I had to go and check. Then they said, no, the lawyers of education, the state law attorneys have informed education. They start with them. When it's the case that I'm the main respondent, they start with me. So I have to check, because if I give you wrong information, you are going to say I'm misleading Parliament. I have sourced the information. For instance, there are cases, mining, had to deal with mining. Sometimes I don't even file an affidavit on a case. I support whatever the lead department is. So it's not like every case is dealt with by me. I must just explain that. It's not out of disrespect. Because if I start saying there are 20 cases, because I've seen 20 cases, and it turns out to be 30 something cases, then I'll be also accused of misleading Parliament. So I've had to check that case so that when I do give you the information, I give you information that is in full. I can give you the cases that I have dealt with immediately, but like every case accurately without checking where other ministers, because some of the cases I'm not even cited, so they don't even come to me. So I'm very sorry. Maybe your expectation that every that comes first comes is not quite correct. Everything that comes, that is a court case, goes to justice first, and justice farms it out to the different departments. It doesn't come straight to me from the people who are putting the court, who are filing the court case. It doesn't work like that. So I just want to say, I do not disrespect this committee. I will give you that information, but I do not get every case as it comes straight to me. Everything is filtered through justice. That's how it works. Thank you.
That's fair enough. Can we then introduce the presentation so that we proceed with the meeting?
Thank you very much, Comrade Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you to all the honorable members, deputy ministers, and all the officials. Since we would like to have time for discussion, I will not take a lot of time so that the presentations are able to be done in 20 minutes so that we can answer questions. Suffice to say that as we move from level to level, it is indeed the risk-adjusted strategy to deal with lockdown, because the president and cabinet have taken a view that we shouldn't abruptly move from a lockdown to normal. We should go step by step. According to WHO, we should actually not ease the lockdown until our numbers start going down. But the reason that we've had to ease the lockdown is that we have to have a balance between trying to save lives, trying to lower the curve, but at the same time, trying to ensure livelihoods. And therefore, the economy is being opened. I won't waste time because, as the Honorable Member said, you have all the information. But as far as government is concerned, all departments should be going back to work, except those people who are over 60 and people who have comorbidities, because they are vulnerable. If they can work at home, they should still work at home. But otherwise, local government, provinces, national government at level 3 should be working and all the services should be available from government. Some of the services were supposed to be available earlier at local government, like some of the revenue generating services, but because they have dependencies with other departments. For instance, if I were to make an example, transport, in terms of issuing licenses on all the transport, is going to only open on the 1st at level 3. So even though we had the local government was supposed to deal with the revenue collection at level 4, they couldn't deal with all of it because some of it is dependent on others. So I will leave it at that and I'll come back to other questions when questions at the time of questions so that I don't eat into the time of the presentation, if you agree, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Fair enough, Minister. My apologies. I didn't deal with the item on apology. The only apology that I have is Honorable Brink extended his apology. Initially, Honorable Hurevat had issues with his power, but I can see he's here. So those were the only two apologies. Over to you, DG, for the... Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good evening to the members of the Portfolio Committee of COCTA, our Deputy Ministers, the Directors General, and all the COCTA officials. Chairperson, we've received the committee's invitation, and the two presentations have indeed been prepared. So the first presentation will deal with the municipal governance and operations as we move to Alert Level 3. The presentation to be made at this meeting will also indicate how we have been guiding municipalities as we traverse during the lockdown. And the presentation will also provide information on how municipalities should hold meetings.
Can you put your camera on? You are live on television.
Apologies, Chairperson.
Chair.
Yes.
If I can proceed, Chair.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Sorry about that, Chair. I was out of the meeting for the third time now, meaning that I didn't hear what the minister was saying. Something is terribly wrong.
I can sort your gadget, but you are back now. I'll ask to text you to quickly brief you what did the minister say for you to catch up. That's okay.
That's fair.
Sure. Let's proceed, DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first presentation to be made will indicate how we have been guiding municipalities as we traverse during the lockdown. And the second presentation will indicate municipalities, under Section 139 of the Constitution. So this presentation will also explain the root causes for some of the interventions that we've had to take as a department. And the officials that are here to make the presentation, we will start firstly with Dr. Kevin Naidoo, and he will look at the first presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Can you load the presentation on the screen, please? Let's okay, load.
Can you view it, Chair? Is the presentation available?
You have to load it yourself, not
I
you.
Have.
Not yet.
Can you see it now?
No.
Can you view it now, Chair?
Not yet, unless it's only me.
Andile can give me sharing rights.
Andile?
There are no sharing rights required, Chair. They can flight the presentation from their side. But if they are struggling, I can assist with flighting it from my side.
Chairperson, is Mam Kiza here? I send the apology to say I'll be left the meeting early because I'm under the doctor. I'm from the doctor to the chair. But I didn't hear you read my apology. But thanks, Chairperson.
Okay, it didn't reach me, Mam Kiza. But it's okay now that you have apologized. You can be excused the time you want to leave. It's okay?
No, I'll say to you, maybe because they said at 8 o'clock there must be a medication that I'm taking.
Okay, you'll be excused at 8 o'clock. It's okay. Sure.
Yes.
Let's proceed, Dr. Naidu. The presentation is loaded. You can proceed. Dr. Naidu?
So Andile, am I controlling it?
You've just taken it off again. It was on.
Oh, dear. Is it on now?
Not yet.
Dile, are you doing it?
Sure.
Yes, there we go. Let's proceed. Can we proceed, Dr. Naidu?
All right. Good evening, Honorable Chair, members of the committee, ministers, deputy ministers. The presentation that I'm going to be making, I'm on the second slide, Andile.
But someone is loading it from your side, Dr. Naidu.
All right, so the presentation is going to give you a brief background as to how we've arrived at the directions that we've developed. And the directions will speak to matters relating to meetings, integrated development plan, the provision of essential municipal services, revenue generating services, procurement during this period of the state of disaster. We will then speak to our check we did on compliance with the directions and give you some information around moving to alert level 3, but also focusing, Chair, on some correspondence that was received from Parliament yesterday. So this is the timeline that we've painted just to remind colleagues of how we've arrived here. So at the end of January, the World Health Organization declaring the COVID-19 infections as a public health emergency of international concern. 6 weeks later or thereabout, the WHO declaring COVID as a pandemic. Significantly, on the 15th of March, Cabinet then resolves to declare the national state of disaster. the Disaster Management Center again classifies the pandemic as a national disaster. The minister declares a national state of disaster, and on the evening of that day, the president then addresses the nation. 3 days later, the minister issues regulations, and in those regulations, it provides for the issuing of directions by line function ministers. We subsequently had a local government meeting, and at that meeting, it was resolved that we develop a circular to guide municipalities in this regard. It's important to note, Chair and members, that it is the MUNMEC that focused on how we would come across with the directions that we would develop. And at the MUNMEC, you would know that it's represented by provinces, SAGA, and other stakeholders on invites. So on the 25th of March, that circular that we were working on was translated into directions. And you would see in the green spots there, we've had three iterations of the directions, but changes to, in the main, the directions relating to municipal operations and governance. So what it was included in the directions that was first issued, we basically provided in very broad strokes for these eight matters here: the provision of water and sanitation services, waste management, directing municipalities around isolation and quarantine, significantly around municipal operations and governance, as well as institutional arrangements and precautionary measures to take. So why the three iterations of the directions relating to municipal operations and governance? So when you have regard to direction 6.7 of the directions that were published on the 25th and the 30th of March, those directions indicated that meetings requiring more than 100 persons need to be present where they need to be present. You needed to make appropriate alternative arrangements for such meetings to proceed. And then it goes on to indicate how voting should take place. But by virtue of including this provision there, it meant that there needed to be, in some instances, or there was a risk of physical contact between members. And therefore, we had issued revised directions on the 7th of May, outlawing all contact meetings. So we firstly stated that, one, municipalities and entities are required to perform various functions. We list some of them. We indicate that essential municipal services to be provided under strict adherence to prescripts relating to gatherings, etc. And we state categorically that all meetings, be it council meetings, tribunals, meetings with entities, within entities, must all use teleconferencing and video conferencing mediums. We also indicate, or we direct municipalities thereafter to consider all business that they must consider. A day or two before that, Chair, you'd recall that in the committee, issues around oversight were being raised and why municipalities were not meeting to consider or to process oversight matters. So we tried to make that right through these directions. We also directed municipalities to invite comments on the IDP and the budget, but stressing only through virtual means. Because development tribunal engagements are a huge revenue-generating forum for municipalities, we indicated that those engagements should take place. Revenue sections to operate, although we said that licenses or license units in municipalities should also open, we were well aware of the fact that e-natives would go live from the beginning of next week. The directions then also speak to the undertaking of emergency procurement, It refers to the Treasury instruction as well as to the Treasury circular that was issued around procurements. But importantly also, Chair and Honourable Members, we indicate or we direct municipalities to report all procurement that is undertaken during the state of disaster to be reported to the first council meeting after the lifting of or the lapsing of the state of disaster. On the adoption of IDPs, we direct that municipalities to continue with consultation processes, and they could do so using various platforms such as local media, radio stations, social media such as Facebook, Twitter, WhatsApp, the distribution of pamphlets, notices on buildings, uploading of documents on the website of the municipality through a bulk SMS process, as well as loud hailing. In response, community members and stakeholders could also feedback through social media platforms as well, providing written comments and other avenues that would be available to them. So continuing on the IDPs, we've indicated that the declaration of the state of disaster and the implementation of the lockdown has had an impact on the processes towards the adoption of IDPs. And when we've done a check on municipalities in this regard, three scenarios prevailed. We firstly found that municipalities did not adopt the draft IDPs before the lockdown. Some had adopted the draft IDPs before lockdown but have not consulted with communities. And municipalities that have adopted the draft IDPs and consulted with communities. So with the directions now permitting municipalities to convene virtual meetings, we expect municipalities to finalize and adopt IDPs before the end of next month. With regards to the implications for municipal budgets, Chair, and we've put this in as well, mostly because it was a specific request on the letter that came from yourself. And in this regard, we want to... It's not me, Chair. And in this regard, we want to indicate, Chair and Honourable Members, that on the 30th of March, National Treasury had issued an exemption notice, a very simple, straightforward notice. And for ease of reference, I've just copied the extract from the Government Gazette and put it there, which in essence means that municipalities and their entities are exempted from any timeline provisions in the MFMA until such time that the state of disaster is lifted. Now, to complement the notice that the Treasury issued, they also issued a circular in terms of the MFMA to also expand on certain matters that needed clarification. Checking in with the National Treasury, they've advised us that notwithstanding COVID-19 and the exemption notice that was extended to municipalities, many municipalities have already tabled their budgets for 2021. And the number looks as much as around 99% share of municipalities having tabled their budgets. Around further on the operation of revenue generating services, we encourage all municipalities to continue with revenue collection. We note also that businesses and households are at risk and have a reduced ability to pay for municipal bills. We've noted also, Chair, that some municipalities have offered payment holidays, but we also want to stress that national government has not endorsed this approach. And we say that, Chair, mostly because it will be more difficult to collect revenue that has been postponed or debt that has been postponed for the future. We expect municipalities to do their best to collect revenue while allowing for relief for the indigent and those with temporary payment problems in line with municipalities' existing credit control and indigent policies. The directions, Chair and members, also provide for emergency procurement. We include or we make reference in the directions to the National Treasury instruction that was issued. And we also want to indicate that the instruction notes and the circular that was issued by Treasury provides for measures to open up the supply of products to all suppliers. Obviously, they would need to conform to certain specifications and for being registered on the central supplier database. It provides or it outlines specifications as provided for the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition, World Health Organization requirements, and the Department of Health. It outlines maximum prices which government will procure these items, and also emphasizes the procurement monitoring and reporting requirements that must be adhered to. I once again want to stress, Chair, which is the last part in the direction, that municipalities have to report all procurement undertaken during the period of the disaster to the first council meeting after the lapsing thereof. So are municipalities complying with the directions? The department requested all municipalities via our provinces to report any non-compliance with directions. And when the provinces began to respond to us, they've indicated that they have, on receipt of the directions from us, they distributed it to all municipalities within their area of jurisdiction under the cover of a circular. And in their responses to us, they've indicated that no reports were received indicating non-compliance by the municipalities, as well as this being confirmed by reporting that is done to the disaster operation centers and from the incident reports that we've reviewed. On compliance around virtual meetings, and this is a matter that was also raised, Chair, in the letter from Parliament. In checking in on this, Chair, and members, we've noticed that municipalities that were experiencing challenges with virtual meetings, we've directed them through to the State Information and Technology Agency, CETA. But we've also noted that there were some limitations in relation to using the MS Teams virtual platform. We've learned that the MS Teams platform is unable to accommodate more than 250 connections. And when referring these to the CETA, the CETA had indicated that the platform that they would prefer would be the WebEx platform that has also been security vetted by most other countries as well. On guidance around virtual meetings, SALGA also on the 11th of May issued generic rules for virtual meetings or settings. And in their guiding municipalities, they've also pointed them to the CETA for support in this regard. Are municipalities complying with with the directions on social distancing and sanitization? Municipalities have not reported any challenges in this regard. And we're hoping, Chair and members, that alert level 4 was used to adequately prepare and to ready municipal spaces for alert level 3, which commences next week. Chair and members, a report in this regard will be provided to the committee in due regard. The minister yesterday briefed media on moving to alert level 3 and confirming also that the entire country would be moving to alert level 3, but also identifying the 12 districts in the country that are hotspots. It would be 7 out of our 8 metros and then 5 other districts. The slide here basically indicates what is allowed and what's not allowed during alert level 3. And perhaps I think the last matter that is dealt with in this presentation, Chair, is the correspondence that was received from Parliament yesterday. Correspondence from the Centre for Applied Legal Studies, where they raised the issue around Alert Level 5 providing adequate protection against evictions, but then Alert Level 4 regulations diluted this protection and made it possible for evictions to occur. But perhaps some bit of a narrative as to why this has happened, Chair. We've noted that due to hardship being experienced, people have been unable to pay for rent for their property, while those of us that have mortgages were given some relief by banks, together with a reduction of interest rates. Unfortunately, rental payers did not have a similar form of relief. On 16th April, the regulations prohibited the eviction of a person from their homes. And the next slide will show you the evolution of this very provision over the three regulations that we've had in this regard. But importantly, legal concerns were raised about the wording of this provision, where there was a suggestion that the regulations usurped the powers of the court. Legal opinion that was obtained stated that the movement of persons may be regulated during the state of disaster, but the regulations, importantly, cannot take away the powers of the courts. Court should be given the right to consider the various factors relating to specific evictions that do take place during the lockdown. So, in making these regulations, government was guided by the need to protect people firstly. Government must bear in mind that there are many ordinary people, especially the elderly, are dependent on rental income for their livelihoods. But in responding to the above, there must be a balance of protecting the interests of all people, and then lastly, acknowledging the role of the courts. Chair and members, this slide here indicates the various iterations of the regulations on the prohibition of evictions. You will see the first one indicates that no person may be evicted. The second iteration provides that the courts must be involved in the eviction process. And then the last iteration gives you a marriage of both these regulations, where the very first set, together with the Alert Level 4 regulation on prohibitions, are merged together. And perhaps lastly, Chair, there have been many inquiries relating to requests for the various regulations and directions. And we've included this link here so that members could go to and obtain whatever regulation or notice or direction that they would want. So this is actually the link that you would be taken to. Chairperson, that is the presentation. And I thank you very much.
Dr. Naidu, thank you so much for the presentation. Can I see a show of hands of the members that want to? Can you remove the presentation on the screen now so that we can see by show of hands which members want to interact with the presentation?
Opperman?
Grunewald.
Hussein.
Okay.
Mukadi.
Herman. Hussein.
Hatted with H.
Grunewald as well, please.
Yes, I've already noted you, Honorable Grunewald. Honorable Grunewald. Adebe with an H, Mukalipi, who else?
Nkosi Luthuli.
Nkosi Luthuli. Who else?
So.
Kaba.
So, Kaba. Okay. That's it. Over to you, Honorable Opperman.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to go to page 8 and page 13 regarding sound financial management and compliance. Scientifically, it's said that the disaster will be with us for the next 14 to 24 months. So 2 years is a very long time to wait for a procurement report. How do we ensure emergency procurement measures are not abused in the meantime? And how do we ensure that supply chain management reporting during COVID-19 are related to the councils? Then linked to that question, I asked a question last night about officials who have a record of financial misconduct and need to be on a blacklisting database. Now, in the last relaxed MFMA, and specifically to section 177.1b, councils are exempted from MFMA timeline provisions, and it also provides that councils may now only give their expenditure at the end of the 2019-2020 financial year. Won't this result in a huge regress in audit outcomes? It's on page 10. Regarding page 12, the revenue collection part, ESCOM reported in the report of the 24th of May that the reason why there is such a huge burden on communities is because municipalities add 80% to the price ESCOM sold the electricity to municipalities. And more than 40% of people buy directly from municipalities. And this is the reason why there is a struggle for people to pay their municipal services. How can we address overpricing of electricity tariffs? Or can a report be generated for us of those municipalities that has high electricity tariffs? And because in the light that public participation with regards to municipal budgets and tariffs will start soon. And then I want to know, in the Northern Cape, the Polokwane municipality has been under administration since April 2019, and yet they are regressed again with no improvements, no prosecution, and no consequences. And this municipality has been dissolved 2 weeks ago. And I know there will be no civil litigation.
Honorable Oberman, we are still dealing with the preparedness on the lockdown. We have not yet dealt with the 139
matters. Okay, Chairperson. My next question then is, there is the fiscal response to municipalities. I want to talk about my constituency, Hunter Municipality. SAGA also made reference to this municipality. Now, how do they implement the DMA regulations and directives regarding the precautionary measures with regards to health and safety? SAGA told us that that municipality, it cost them 1,180 rand per month per employee, but they only received 21,000 rand, and the real cost is 175,000 rand. Who should make up the rest of the money? Where must the municipality get the rest of the money to ensure that they adhere to the health and safety procurements with regard to the DMA regulations? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Lucen.
Yeah, Chair, thank you very much. I want to just pick up on the point that Honorable Opperman had raised about the period of the lockdown and the procurement matters, which, Chair, I think to me makes sense. And I think that the provision in the regulations that calls on municipalities to report their emergency procurement at the first meeting of the council after the lockdown, which I think is a good provision, but where I think that the unintended consequence of that is nobody at that stage knew just how long this lockdown is going to last, and it could very well be another year before we get to level one. We don't know. The problem that we sit with is that from now up until then, there could very well be quite a number of questionable procurement contracts that municipalities would have undertaken. And I worry that COCTA and the department itself has not put any provisions in place. And perhaps that's an area that the minister might want to give consideration to an amendment at the next opportunity. I think it would be much better, Chair, if it's practical to do so, that that municipalities report that information of emergency procurement either on their websites or to the council in writing, at least on a monthly basis, so that they know that if there's transparency on these contracts, that there is the less likelihood for there to be excessive expenditure. Take, for example, Chairperson, the report in the Daily Dispatch in the Chris Hani municipality, district municipality, where they paid up to 175 rand for a 500 milliliter sanitizer. And then, of course, there are a number of other items that municipality procured from a company that's apparently owned by somebody with political connections in that municipality. So that's one example, and I have no doubt, Chair, when you look at the report, the next report that comes about Section 139 interventions, you will pick up from there that a number of the causes of those municipalities, the status of those municipalities and the erosion of governance there is largely because of poor governance, poor financial management, high levels of corruption. So we know that this is a culture amongst many municipalities and a contributing factor for municipalities that are going down, you know, sliding. And yet there's the opportunity now more than ever for municipalities that don't have too much of oversight during the lockdown to be able to spend money as they please, and the oversight mechanisms have been eroded in the regulation. So if the department and the minister will please give some consideration to that, you want to be able to close that loophole now. Because if we pick up these things after a year, the money would have been spent, and then you're going to start a whole lot of investigations, which is going to cost even more money, and we're going to throw good money after bad. The second point I wanted to raise, Chairperson, is the issue around the lockdown regulations. And Chair, I think that you and the rest of the members of the Portfolio Committee, we've talked about this, and I made this comment once before, that from the time that the President, initially when the President announced the lockdown sometime in March, the impression I got and the mood in the country at the time, I think that almost every single South African was behind the President when he did what he did and put South Africa into a lockdown. There was a sense of unity and solidarity and a sense of pride in the manner in which the President had addressed us at the time. All political parties stood behind him. All South Africans stood behind him. And we were all proud that we were moving in the right direction. But as time went on, Chairperson, and as our ministers had produced the regulations that they did, that goodwill that the President was able to secure in South Africa was slowly but surely being eroded. And where we are today, I think more and more South Africans are becoming very, very cynical about some of the regulations that are being produced on a regular basis. Take, for example, Chairperson, just one example. I think that the decision, for example, to open up churches is a good one. And there's 50 people can fit into a church, and for as long as there's been social distancing and the proper safety protocols that are being implemented, I think that it's good. But if you can put 50 people into a church, it doesn't make sense why you can't put 10 people in a salon with the same level of protection protocols in place. So that's just one example. I mean, the other example, Chairperson, in the regulations, you know, if you are a single parent and you want to move your child between divorced parents, you have to go to court and get an order and get a permit. And there's all sorts of regulations that's required in order for you to get a permit to move your child. But if you want to buy alcohol from the 1st of June, you can just walk down the street and go to a bottle store. To me, that just doesn't make sense. That if you want to move your child, you need to go to court and follow all of these rules. But if you want to buy a bottle of whiskey, you don't need a permit. So you don't, you know, some of these regulations are just illogical. It's irrational. It doesn't make sense. I mean, you welcome, for example, the extension of people exercising from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. But why is it necessary? Why do you have to say 6 p.m.? I mean, what difference does it make if somebody wants to exercise until 6:30 in the evening? And none of these things to me and to many South Africans, you know, make sense because we're not getting the explanation from the ministers that we should. Because how is it that 6:30 or 7 o'clock at night, if I'm exercising, how could that even affect any person or contribute towards somebody contracting the virus? Or it has nothing to do with COVID-19 whatsoever. Then, Chairperson, the last point that I want to make, and I would really like to hear what the minister's view is on this. In a court papers in response to the tobacco company challenge, you'd recall, Chairperson, initially the minister, when she addressed the public, she had informed us that there were up to about 2,000 people who had initially objected to the suggestion by the president to reopen the sale of cigarettes. Well, in the recent court papers, the minister, after producing all of the detail in those papers, it seems that the minister may have misled South Africa. And from the 2,000, and those details are in the court papers that's in the minister's name. So this information is not new, and it's not sub judice because it's not in the public domain. And it turns out, Chairperson, that there was only a small percentage of that 2,000 people that actually objected to the sale of tobacco. In fact, in terms of percentages, 29% of the people of the 2,000 actually supported the ban. 23% were in favor and 29% were against. So it was only 454 people ultimately that objected to the suggestion of reopening tobacco sales. And yet the minister seemed to have misled South Africa. And I'll give her the benefit of the doubt in the hope that she will respond to it. But from the information that we've got at the moment and what's in the public domain, it doesn't appear to me that when the minister told us that there were 2,000 people who had objected, there's any truth to that, because it appears that there's only 454. So I really hope that the minister is going to address that matter and not say that this is a matter that's now sub judice. It's an opportunity for her to be able to put that information and explanation out to the public, or else it leaves us with no other option but to believe that the minister actually misled the country. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Groenewald.
Thank you, Honorable Speaker. Speaker, let me start. I'm not going to repeat all the questions because...
Chairperson, not Speaker.
Sorry, Chairperson. My mind is at two places at once. Chairperson, let me not repeat everything that Hussein also said because it's concluded a lot of my questions as well. But in terms of no contact meetings, I want to know if there's a municipality that do not comply with the regulations, what will the recourse from the department be? Secondly, in terms of the website of municipalities, it's a good tool to use to get all the information there. But unfortunately, most of the municipalities' websites are not working or so far behind. I mean, there's one municipality last posted on their website in 2014. How are the department going to correct that? And then in terms of circulate 30, it issued any action referred to 3.1 in the conditions. Any action referred to paragraph 2 must be taken within 30 days after the national state of disaster lapse or is terminated. And that's more or less the same that Mr. Hussein also asked. But if the FMMA and the provisions and timelines in the FMMA is being moved until such time that the disaster ends, when will the next budget being approved then? Because in terms of the MFMA calendar, you have specific days at when the budget must be approved within the municipality or else the municipality dissolves. The usual one is by 1st of July, if it's not been approved, then the council is being dissolved. How are we going to get around that? And then in terms of revenue generating, just can I say input maybe, if the department can go and seek to exempt municipalities from VAT. If you have a look at VAT, it won't, can I say, lessen the income of the municipalities, but it will have a direct effect by, can I say, the users to pay such municipal accounts. It will drop by 300 to 400 rands. That will assist. If the department can have a look to that. Then in terms of municipalities that struggle, I know, for example, one municipality said, no, but its councillors can't use the internet, they don't know how to, and so forth. But in terms of the Office Bearers Act, of the Remuneration of Office Bearers Act, every councillor is getting a stipend for internet use, that extra 300 rand they get monthly. Why is it then that those councillors still get that part of the money if they don't use the internet and can't use the internet? And how are they going to mitigate that? Then in terms of SALGA, you have a generic rule that went out to all municipalities. Just a question to see to ask if we as a committee may receive that as well, if they maybe can send it to us. Then in terms of the lockdown, the last four, one question is daycare centres or on the level three. Will daycare centres be open to open in level three? It's a big concern because there's a lot of people going to work now. And every level going down, there's more people going to work. But who's going to have to look at a child when both parents work and they cannot afford to resign from one work just so that they can have a look at the kids? How is the department going to propose that those parents should act when they have, and I'm an example, my son is 1 year old, my wife's a teacher, she had to go back to work today. How do we both, if we are at work, have somebody to look at the child if daycare centres can't open? Then in terms of the newest regulation that was being issued today as well, with churches, if we say faith-based institution where gathering can take place, does that include cell groups, for example, or pray groups at homes? If we can get clarity on that. And then where there's the same premise as separate buildings on the premises, where each building can accommodate 50 people with social distancing, is 50 people max that can meet an entire premise, or is it 50 people per building? I think the clarity on that is quite important. And that's from me. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Kunerwald. Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think that I must submit my apology for yesterday. I didn't receive any communique in terms of the meeting. That I went to my deployment in Skoon Water Farm, Ward 5 in Machadodorp, Mpumalanga, which is my deployment municipality at Emakhazeni. In terms of, I want to speak in terms of Regulation 19 of the COVID-19 regulations, level 4. I think that we are overwhelmed in terms of the complaints. The presenter said that that might have been... Say it again.
You were losing you.
Oh, let me come closer. I am saying that I'm from yesterday with regards to Regulation 19 of the COVID-19 regulations, where it says there should be a full moratorium on evictions. I'm saying that we are overwhelmed or inundated, as I learned from Honorable Khadem, this word inundated, with complaints of farm communities who are abused by secretaries of the CPA, who collude with the police and sheriff to rent out white farmers and benefit out of the rental money instead of the community. When the community starts to raise their heads, the councillors then will bring the sheriff and to evict the community without issuing a court order, even during the lockdown period, and the while the regulations do not allow for the evictions. And I think clarity should be made certain in terms of what should happen in terms of the courts having to issue eviction orders, whether they should in fact during this period issue those particular documents. Secondly, the other issue was covered by Honorable Schoenewald on the municipalities, on the speakers who has clearly disregarded the regulations. I wanted to speak on that because there is an issue in Western Cape of a particular Mr. Pretorius in George Municipality, who allowed Councillor Lona Skitsenger, who was under quarantine due COVID-19 to travel from home to the voting station, posing a risk to other public representatives. I wanted to ask that, but Honorable Khunevart has covered that. Thirdly, I wanted to speak on the issue of operations of revenue generating services. There is a sentence there that speaks about businesses in terms of them being exempted during this period. I mean, businesses have been making their profit through the payment of bigger salaries to workers, and we still make their money through massive retrenchments. Thus, business cannot be exempted because there is no positive demonstration of what impact they have done in the further development of workers' lives and shift from tax avoidance. That's my submission to that. Fourthly, what would have been the hindrance of to continue smoothly with the processes of adoption of the ITPs? Because there it says that the scenario number one did not adopt the ITPs before the lockdown. I should think that it sounds like an excuse to me. It should have then continued with drafting of the ITPs via virtual meetings for the regulation. Should have followed suit. The other issue pertains to reduced effort to get money owed. Such practices are indeed irresponsible if they do not provide a clear recovery strategy to recollect hold revenue on the basis of payment holidays. What will be the recovery strategy to collect and maximize hold revenue due to payment holidays during the lockdown period? I think those are the questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Leza. Honorable Hadewe.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me start on the issue that has been raised by two Honorable Councillors in relation to slide 8 and slide 13, Chair, with regards to all procurement undertaken during the national state of disaster to be reported in the first council after the disaster. Chair, I don't think the intention of these regulations and the state of disaster is to relieve municipal council from their oversight role and responsibilities. Honorable Chair, understanding the state of our municipalities, particularly when it comes to fruitless, wasteful, and unauthorized expenditure, I think it will be suicidal for us to even attempt to say that municipalities must report all procurement towards the end. In fact, at the end of the national disaster, I think what should be done or should be included in the regulation is that in the first meeting after that transaction has occurred, municipalities must report those procurement processes. If they cannot meet monthly, because now municipalities are encouraged to hold virtual meetings, it should be then encouraged that immediately in the next meeting, whatever procurement that has occurred under the state of national disaster should be reported to council. And that's also in line with some of the supply chain management policies, that all the expenditures are reported to the next sitting of council. Otherwise, it will be tempting these municipalities to fall into the trap of unauthorized, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The second issue that I would like to raise, Chair, is in relation to slide 10, where it speaks about municipal council that have managed to hold their meeting to pass IDP. The report that we're getting, it's not clear and accurate. It speaks about 90% of municipal councils. Also, the issue in relation to municipal councils that are having challenges when it comes to virtual meetings, we are not getting an accurate and correct figures in terms of how many municipal councils are struggling to hold the virtual meetings. And that limits us in terms of our effective oversight. Okay. COCTA is a department responsible for disaster and for issuing these directives and regulations should be in a position to get an accurate figure in relation to how many municipalities are struggling to hold the virtual meetings, what are the mitigating factors in place to remedy such challenges, so that for us as the portfolio committee, we are then afforded an opportunity to intervene accordingly in our oversight, in monitoring whether or not the 10% of the municipal council that have not passed their budget, do they have time frames in place on when are they going to pass their budget? Because we are given until the 30th of June, but I don't think we should wait until the 30th of June. We should be now be in the process to get the sense of whether or not these municipalities are moving towards adopting these budgets and IDP. So in essence, what I'm trying to raise, Chair, is that COCTA should have measures in place and monitoring tools to get accurate and detailed information. We shouldn't be given percentage because we're limited in terms of effecting oversight as the portfolio committee. We are also now going to be full-time from the 1st of June as a committee in doing our oversight. So the information that comes before us ought to be an accurate and detailed information. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Hadebe. Honorable Mkhalipi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to ask the Minister to share with us as the Portfolio Committee as to why are we rushing to open all levels? Why? Because even yesterday before she announced on level 3 on the media, she also alluding to the fact that the curve has not flattened. The Minister will know as an activist that people who will die of this COVID will be the black people. Even here on slide, that talks about moving to alert level 3. The only thing that is only emphasized here is involves the easing of some restriction, including on work. And we know that during level 5, there were so many cases that were reported about companies who were forcing workers to work during level 5. And it's the same challenge that the country is facing about the level of the virus that is increasing. So if we are opening the economy in such a way that we know that our black people are the one that is going to be affected because they will be going to work, if the Minister can share with us, but what is the real reason? Why are we rushing to kill black people.
There is one.
The second issue also, Chairperson, when you go to slide that talks about municipalities complying with directions, I don't think that is enough for COCTA to say that the department requested all municipalities via provinces to report any non-compliance with directions. In response, provinces have indicated that the directions were issued under cover of secular blah, 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 blah. Because you also mentioned when you opened the meeting, Chairperson, that Tina, as the committee members, we are doing our work to check with our constituencies. So it means that we get issues that is happening on the ground and we have to come and talk about those issues here, because we are representing people on the ground. Just to rely on the report from provinces without verifying as the lead department, I don't think it gives us a complete picture. Why I'm saying this, Chairperson? Currently, SASSA does not issue any food parcel because there is 350 COVID-19, of which that 350 as well as a grant is not processed. So it means a person who does not have work, who does not have anything to eat, can access SASSA food parcels because they said it will be a double dipping. Social development does not have anything to assist those kind of people. There's a crisis. It means that people who does not have jobs, who does not have money, they don't have anything to eat. So we must be told by the department in terms of municipalities' intervention. There is a disaster management in municipalities whereby where you come across with a person who does not have anything to eat, you just go to a disaster management in municipalities. If you remember very well, Chair, when Councillor Kaunda, the mayor of Thekwini, was here, I even raised the issue of disaster management to say that whenever our people are finding themselves in a state of disaster and they need an intervention from disaster management, they just said they don't have a budget. So I'm raising this thing particular because there is a report or a section in this presentation that talks about the municipalities in compliance. Going forward, Chairperson, on the very same slide, are municipalities complying with the directions? And then the subtopic is the social distancing and sanitization. And the department can't even tell us, as we are opening up the economy, it means there's a lot of movements of our people. They are not even telling us, is all municipalities doing the sanitization or disinfection of all places in South Africa in order to curb the virus? We are not even told about that. Chairperson, on the slide that talks about operation revenue, the department, when the doctor was doing the presentation, he even mentioned that there are municipalities that have given people the holiday payment and the national government is not in support of that. But the fact of the matter, Chairperson, we also raised this matter before here to say people on the ground who have lost jobs, what is the municipalities doing in terms of making sure those people are not punished, are not penalized, are not forced to pay for revenues? Because I even said to that meeting, Chairperson, now there are no bills that are given out to people and there is no communication, there is no number that our people are told, just call here. If you have lost your job, just make sure that you report here so we can know as a municipality. And we said, since there is no plan, there is no clear plan from the municipalities, people will see with huge bills without any intervention from the municipalities. Regarding the evictions, which also there is a letter that is also included in our packages talking about evictions, I don't think that it is just enough to say that there's no evictions according to the regulation, because we are not speaking about the municipalities who are evicting people. We are talking about people who are owning flats, who are owning properties, who are evicting people, but who are private properties. So how far with the capacity with the municipality to also to make sure that those people are protected in terms of evictions. For instance, today we saw on the news that many people in one flat in Etekwini, they were evicted by a person who's not even here in South Africa, who is far away, but who just gave instruction to say, if you don't have money to pay me, you must be evicted from my property. So I know very well that at some point, if it's a private property, it's becoming very difficult to protect our people, but we must enforce that regulation as municipalities. So those are the issues that we need to be told by the department. Are they getting exactly specific issues with the municipalities? In terms of exemptions, I think it's on page 11, Chairperson, of your presentation. I think the colleagues have covered me to say that even if the National Treasurer issued an exemption notice, but now we have to link, because the aim of exemption notice from municipalities is to divert funds and go and address those issues that need to be addressed. For instance, if there's no water, there's no electricity in an area in Ward 22 in Eklemont. So we must also be told that after the funds were diverted, after that exemption from the National Treasurer, which projects were implemented during COVID-19? It must not be just a lily way of giving the municipalities to take money from somewhere and do whatever they want. It must also be accompanied with feasible projects that will talk to our people, because we still have so many challenges, especially with issues that we raised in Ward 22. One of the issues is Ward 22, where people are still using a bucket system. So in my mind, if a mayor of Etekwini will be saying that now I can divert funds from this to this, it means that you must go and also address that issue of basket system that were reported long time ago from my municipalities. The last one, Chairperson. The last one, Chairperson, is the one that appearing here on the presentation under the background, where it says precautionary measures to mitigate employees' health and safety risk. This one also, I would like to get a clear answer from the minister, because she is the head of COCTA. I know that at some point, some of the issues, as she also said when she was responding to Honorable Hussein, some of the issues or some of the things that we ask her, it does not belong to her department. But at the end of the day, it comes back to COCTA, because each and everything that we, it could be a hospital, it could be a school, it could be what, it also under the municipality. So if we are talking about precautionary measures to mitigate employees' health and safety risk, Minister, there is a crisis pertaining a hospital called Eddington in Etekwini. I'm sure you know very well that hospital, because we are familiar with the territory. And that hospital is under Etekwini municipality, and it has been earmarked for COVID-19. But that hospital has been in a state, in a very bad state before even COVID-19. One example that I can give it to you, Minister, is that we have 7 lifts in that hospital, but only 1 lift that is working. While the hospital is supposed to deal with COVID-19, there are so many issues. I don't know if your jurisdiction is COCTA. You also have a capacity to go and check those institutions that does not fall under COCTA, but they also are the government institutions such as this one. Because the Premier of KwaZulu-Natal said that Eddington Hospital must be deal with COCTA, with COVID-19. But yet, the state of the hospital is a mess in such a way that you can't be referring people to that hospital. Thank you very much, Chair.
Kalipi, thank you so much. The next person is Honorable Pretty Kabanchava. Mamkis.
Hello, Sisi. Hello, Chair.
Yeah,
I'm here. Yes, Chair. Chairperson, let me thank to the Minister and the on and the Mr. Knight who about their board presentation. Chairperson, I'm also saluting saluting the minister about the hair work that is doing to our community. But I have question, Chairperson, to the minister. That honourable minister, as the command council, because it's not you alone, the command council, as the command council led by you, agreed about the opening of alcohol. Don't the command council think about that the alcohol is dangerous more than the cigarette. I'm saying this through you, Chair, Honorable Minister, because when the person is drunk, is out of his mind or her mind, it can't think. The Dinosa Union of Nurses said, the opening, I quote, the opening of alcohol, it will lead to many people needed help and treatment in the hospital, and that it will put the nurses, the life of the nurses in danger. As the Minister of Police was announcing that since the alcohol was closed, there is no overflowing at hospitals by people who are stabbed, shot, shooted by guns or whatever. But now the command council opened this thing that is dangerous to our people. My question also is said is because at the location, this COVID-19, if I can agree with the Honorable Mkhalipi to say, is because the command council are opening this alcohol because at the location where black people are many, there is no disaster of this COVID-19 to kill black people. That is why this alcohol is open. I'm just asking. I'm not saying it's like that, Chair, but I'm asking why. It's because us, as black people, we are on our way now to die when we are not drinking. And also, Chair, if I can put this question to the minister, this opening of churches, Honorable Minister, I didn't see or hear any timeline of churches in or out. I thought maybe the command council, they will manage his timeline. I'm asking this question because through you, Chair, Honorable Minister, because I'm a Zion. At Zion, we can open the church at 11 and close it at 4:30. And also at Zion, we are rounding and beating Kalanga. Kalanga, they call it like that. But how can we gonna manage the social distance on that? And also, why this open of church does not, maybe if I may ask, Chair, is the Honorable Minister with her command council put any timeline measures in place to manage these churches so that if they can say church must, all churches, they must open at 9 o'clock and close at 11, so that if they will manage these churches, because churches, they are not the same, Chairperson. And also, I don't know, if I may ask, when is the office of municipalities collect revenue will be open? Because people, they can't even access to pay their water in the municipality. All offices of municipalities are closed. When is the day where they will announce that the municipality offices are open so that people, they can go and pay? And also, Chairperson, in this alcohol thing, I can see that there is this regulation that says Chibini travel restaurant, they won't be open, they'll remain closed. But on top of that, Chair, there will be a danger because those who have money, they'll go and buy this alcohol with a bulk so that they will give other people to be drunk. And after that, there will be no one who will manage this situation of regulation. They won't even be appeared by the regulation when they are drunk. You know, people, when he's drunk, he's drunk. So I'm saying to the minister, if he can clarify this question to us so that we'll understand what was the intention or something pushing them to open the thing that can change the people's mind. And close the cigarette that cannot change anyone's mind. I can't even understand what was that. And also, Chair, to the presentation of Mr. Knighton, a provision of water sanitation direction. This direction or directive, I hear them, and I'm happy with them. But my question is that to this presentation, when they're gonna be implemented and how and when they're gonna be implemented? Because they can say it here in paper, but when it comes to implementation, they won't be implemented. They'll be staying like this as they are staying. I'm asking those questions, Chairperson, because there are many, many, many directives and directions in this presentation, but there is no time frame of implementation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ma'am Kize. Now, Honorable Luthuli Stan.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, everybody. Some of my questions were taken, but I will ask on question on the slide number 12. Or on the representation, when they are saying on the disaster management regulations and municipality governments, it states that some municipalities have offered payment holidays to collect monies owed, although I must underline that this is not endorsed by the national government. What municipality offers such payment holidays? On which conduct what is being done regarding this situation? This provides an ample opportunity for further mismanagement and corruption. The other one is that, according to the media article, Independent Online, on 16 May 2020, enforcement agency forming part of the anti-corruption task team have joined forces to tackle allegations of corruption in connection with a COVID-19 relief fund. Does the department know of any case of corruption that is being investigated in relation to emergency procurement measures by the municipality under COVID-19. The other thing which we're not comfortable. Some of the bishop and the churches really, they are suffering a lot out of to pray. We have a problem really, because those people they've got churches, but the regulation, it seems as if it is very, very strict according to them, in such a way that some of them, they don't even open up the churches. What does the minister can help us out of that? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Lutuni. Honorable Slow. Honorable Slow. Honorable Slow.
Bring me the correct news. Thank you, Jonathan. Let me firstly welcome the update given by our minister, Honorable Dlamini Zuma, for the work well done. We thank you, Mama. And also thank Naidu for an effective presentation. Let me start by saying a number of municipalities are faced with challenges, many challenges ranging from not being able to pay their monthly services rendered by our municipalities. What is the department doing in making sure that they are going to strengthen the capacity of all the municipalities in this country, because it has affected the entire country? Secondly, the impact of COVID-19 is estimated to be around at least for one or for the next 2 years. What contingency plans the department have in place to deal with COVID-19 eventualities? One of the most important the municipalities is required to do is to adhere to cost containment measures. What strategies has the municipalities implemented to make sure that labs lives up to their expectations? Because as of now, there are so many problems that has affected our people, starting with the SMMEs. Another question is, how do we ensure that the residents are given a certain percentage of rebate, especially on water and electricity tariffs? What is your intake on that? And also, how do we ensure that...
Honorable Tau. Honorable Tau. Are you still there? Honorable Tau. Honorable Tau. Colleagues, can you hear or is only me?
No, sir. It seems like he's lost.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we've lost.
We lost it, Chair.
Honorable Hadeva, you omitted something, then followed by Honorable Oberman.
Even me, Chair. Baba, sorry, Chair.
Oh, and Mom, you, please. Remember. Okay, yes. It will be the three of you I'm giving you a minute, all of you, to ask to raise the issues that you have omitted, so that we can move to the next presentation too.
Sorry, ma'am, my hand is as well.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Okay, Otto Groenewald. Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Any law, policy, or regulation that is passed, Chair, must be implementable, monitored, and lastly, it has to be enforceable. Now, in relation to the regulation that has been passed, Chair, urging municipalities to provide shelter for homeless people. Last week, we saw the city of Cape Town closing down its Strandfontein homeless shelter and dumping people under the bridge. I have not seen to date, Chair, or heard anything from COCTA in enforcing compliance, what is clearly a sign of defiance from the city of Cape Town. I would therefore like to get an understanding from the department that in these regulations that are passed by the department, what are they doing to enforce them where there are clear signs of defiance from these municipalities, with specific reference to this issue of the city of Cape Town dumping homeless people under the bridge. Thank you.
Honorable Groenewald, sorry, my apologies, Honorable Opperman.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just through you, I want to ask the Minister, will the table of essential services be amended to reflect what the Minister said about the categorization of religious counseling as an essential service as per page 16 and 17? If yes, when? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Opperman. Honorable Mamkize?
Yes, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. I left the crucial comment of Chairperson Minister Mthembu yesterday. Minister Mthembu in the command council, when he was closing, Minister Mthembu said, the government of South Africa cannot policing over 54 million people in South Africa. The people must stay safety. They must look after themselves. Chairperson, that thing, it was contradicting the statement of Mr. Mthembu's statement was contradicting the regulation, because regulation was open last year, open the alcohol to be sold to the public. And also, Chair, that was a contradicting of the statement of Minister Mthembu to the if he said people, they must look after themselves and stay safe. How can you stay safe when you are drunk? And also, Chair, the opening of this alcohol is trying to finish our youth, because it's many people who are drunk is the youth, which means we will be not having any future in this country with this opening of alcohol. So, because our youth don't be drunk, they'll want their girlfriend to come closer to them, and they'll want all sorts of things that are not good for our children. I'm saying to the minister, they must go back and sit down. I'm not directing him, but I'm saying the command council, they must sit down and think twice about this opening of alcohol. It will kill our children. They must better opening to cigarettes than alcohol. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Ma'am Kizem. The last one, I think, is Honorable Groenewald. Honorable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, there's only two things in terms of the religion as well. Can marriages happen in churches? Does it classify as, as a service as well? And then secondly, on the can I say, gazetted regulation that was being brought in terms of schools reopening. If you look at Article 4.1, it states when which grades are returning to school. But grade 1 and grade 2 were omitted. And I think it must come on the 6th July, but it has been omitted in the regulation. There's nowhere there is grade 1 and grade 2, if the department can just clarify that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Grewald, Minister and team. It's a hell lot of them. Over to you, Minister and the team.
Thank you. I will allow the team to answer what they can, and then I'll come towards the end. Thank you.
Team Deacock, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. It's Kevin Naidoo again. Chair, I'm supported by a whole team of people. And
Kevin,
while I...
Put your camera on, please.
Okay. So, Chair, I'm saying that I'm supported by a whole team of people. And while I begin to respond to some of the questions, I'm going to ask colleague Mr. Bulelo Sigaba to prepare to respond to the many finance, municipal finance related issues. Mr. Rabotata, I think there was one issue around the IDPs that were raised. There was a matter around the slow implementation of infrastructure projects. That was raised, and I see Mr. Vimba is also in the meeting, so if you could respond to that. There were certain compliance to the regulations issues, and if Dr. Tao could respond to them, perhaps the issues around offences and fines, as well as the opening up of schools. So let me start, Chair. There were many issues raised or questions raised by members around the clause or the provision requiring that municipalities report procurement undertaken during this period of the disaster. So rightly we have that, and I think I must have mentioned it more than two times in the presentation as emphasis. But it should also be read, Chairperson, together with Circular 99 of the MFMA, right? And Circular 99 says that the monthly and the quarterly reporting that municipalities are expected to do in terms of Section 71 of the MFMA, that must still happen because it can even be done remotely, and there's no excuse not to continue with that. Circular 99 also, Chair, goes and specifically states that municipalities, and I'm quoting what it says, are still expected to undertake the 2018-19 audit verification and also to submit the information on trading services gross and net operating margins. So while the COVID is in progress, Chairperson and members, this reporting must take place. Perhaps only on the issue relating to evictions. And Honorable Shlaesa and Mkalipi raised the matter sharply. But suffice to say, Chair, that the marriage of the two provisions in the earlier sets of regulations are meant to be read together with each other and be considered by the courts or by the implementers of the on a case-by-case basis. So, for example, if you have a tenant that is presently living in a house or in an apartment that's, where the rent is 40,000 rand, that person, if he cannot or she cannot pay that 40,000 rand per month rent, the landlord would intervene and say, okay, I'm going to be evicting you, removing you from here and taking you to alternative close accommodation, but where the rent is going to be 10,000. So I think it's instances like that, circumstances like that, that courts would consider when the provisions related to eviction do take place. There was a matter raised around the misuse of the 300 rand per month allowance for data. And look, if there's any prevention of the notices that issues from could be a breach of the code of conduct, and there's particular sanctions when that does happen. So I'm going to respond to those specific questions, Chair, and then hand over to Mr. Kigawa to deal with the other expense of municipal enhancement.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Chair. Thank you, Kevin. And good evening to the Honourable Chair and the Honourable Members. My name is Mbulelo Sigaba, as Kevin. Also greetings to our Honourable Minister and Deputy Ministers, DG, our CEOs and colleagues. There were issues that were raised by some Honourable Members around SCM, and I think some of the issues Kevin has touched on them, but I think there was this concern about reporting to the first council meeting. I think the honourable members will acknowledge that when this lockdown was actually promulgated, it was on the assumption that it could be 2 to 3 months. It's not going to extend to 12 to 24 months. So it was on the assumption that there will be complete lockdown and we won't be using all the facilities that are there at the present moment that facilitate actually for the council to meet. The important point was that because the accounting officer, which is the municipal manager, is given this authority to deviate from inviting competitive bids in cases of emergency, then what they would do is that they would report after 3 months. But now that the situation allows finance from Monday, the 1st of June, for some normality to come to place, the municipal manager is required to report to the council for any progress on the procurement around COVID-19 related expenditure. We also, together with National Treasury, have designed a system for reporting on a weekly basis the expenditure that talks to COVID. So we are not really going to wait until the Disaster Management Act is no longer there for the council to meet to report, that is for municipalities. They will have to report each and every time there's a municipal council. So the municipalities will determine the agenda from the accounting officer. On the issue of tariffs, where for instance, Honorable Opperman was talking about people paying different tariffs for electricity, more especially if it's supplied by ESCOM and also supplied by municipality. We have to acknowledge that ESCOM supplied areas, there are no street lighting that are involved, more especially because they are supplying to the rural areas. But when it comes to the cities or to the towns, there are additional expenses that municipalities have to incur in terms of, for instance, street lighting. They also have to maintain some of the parks. They also have to have community halls with lights that when they are being hired. All these additional expenses, and they've got to be built within the tariff structure of municipalities. But what we are doing as a department to try and normalize this different tariff rates. We are doing, we are planning to do a cost of supply study on electricity during the current financial year that is that has started in April, so that we, because Eskom had more than 8 tariffs that they were charging, and we have agreed that this should be reduced to about 3 to cater for these different tariffs that are being charged to different consumers. On the issue of credit control and the fact that people will not be able to pay, yes, we have not exempted municipalities from using the present credit control policies that they have to recover money from people that are. All we have done is we have asked them to look at the merits of each and every consumer, as some of them will be coming forward indicating that they no longer have jobs. And through the 20 billion stimulus package, we are targeting that municipality.
You are breaking.
I would assume it's most probably then where I am, Minister, but your chair, I'm not sure what could be the reason. Okay, can you hear me now? Yes, Chair.
It's very clear on my side, Chair.
But you know.
Yes. So in terms of the people that cannot afford, more especially for them, people that are now going to be indigent, yes, because of that they cannot earn income, we have made provision to increase the equitable share that will be transferred to municipalities, so that they can actually cater for the people that will no longer be earning any income. So we will be putting up a lot of additional funding to finance for this reduction in revenue for municipalities. Honorable MP Luthuli also mentioned about the fact that we're saying municipalities are giving holidays. The example of one municipality that actually gave payment holidays to its customers is Stellenbosch Municipality in the Western Cape. So we were saying we do not support this this initiative, because it will create an impression that people are no longer required to pay for services. Remember, municipalities are still providing water and electricity to consumers, and those that actually can afford have got to come up front. So from Monday, municipal offices will be opened to start collecting the revenue. But in the meantime, the other municipalities, they normally have agreements with agents like the retail shops for additional collection, where they pay a collection fee. So it's not that the payment of services, there was a lockdown, people could not pay. Yes, in some of the rural towns, there was no way that they could pay, because some of these facilities are not there. In terms of the collection points, I've talked through the collection points. If there's something that I may have, on the exemption of VAT, there was also, I think, a suggestion that we need to exempt VAT on municipal services. That is not the mandate that we have as a department. This is the mandate of the Department of Finance. So we won't be able to propose any exemption. But yes, we have requested additional funding from Treasury to cater for this lost revenue for municipalities. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, before Mr. Sigaba leaves, it's Hussein here. I think he hasn't addressed just one matter. Would you mind if I raise it quickly?
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Sigaba, I accept the explanation that you gave us about the reporting mechanism, and that initially there was the expectation, or there wasn't the expectation, that the lockdown was going to last as long as it did. I appreciate that. You also said to us that as of the 1st of June, there is the expectation from municipalities to report then in terms of Treasury or to Treasury, and that's contained already in a note issued by Treasury that they must report to their relevant treasuries on a 30-day basis. My point was simply this, is that the oversight mechanism in the regulations is the concern. I mean, we appreciate that municipalities can report based on the treasury notes and based on what you're saying to the different treasuries. But the oversight mechanism is problematic because the regulation says that the municipality must report to the first council meeting after the lockdown has ended. And Honorable Beki Adebe had also expanded on the point that I made. So our concern is the oversight mechanism because your regulations make it easier now for municipalities to say, sorry, we don't have to report to you now. We only have to report at the end of the lockdown. So is that something that you think that COCTA can consider to have the regulations amended so that the various municipalities and the councillors whose responsibility it is to conduct oversight can do that, and then municipalities don't have to hide behind that regulation? I hope I've explained it properly.
Yes, Honorable Hussein, I think I hear you loud and clear. We will definitely discuss with the colleagues that are doing the regulation so that a circular that actually clarifies that is issued so that there's no confusion. Meetings have got to continue as normal as all the technology is there now for councillors to meet. They still have also to adopt even some of the budgets that are there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Admin, are we done, administration? Are we all done?
Chair, if I may come.
Dr. Tau had to come.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, honorable members. Good evening, Minister.
Just show your face.
Okay, can I be seen? It's a bit dark.
In the dark room.
Thank you very much. Good evening, honorable members, minister, deputy ministers, DG and colleagues. I think, honorable chair, the part that I will touch on has already partly been covered by Mr. Sigaba. It's a matter relating to the funding that has been allocated to municipalities. It has been raised by Honorable Opperman for one of the municipalities, I think Hantam, if I got it well. Firstly, just to indicate that the principle around the disaster grant is basically to augment what will have been contributed through various sources. Hence, the figure per financial year, it's really low to cover all needs of municipalities and even sector departments. I'm saying this because the contribution that we made should be read in the context of other grants that have been reprioritized to cater for the needs of various municipalities. As you might be aware, honorable members, there has been a reprioritization of the integrated urban development grants to cater for municipal needs in terms of COVID response. There has been a reprioritization of the municipal infrastructure grant. There has been an integration, a reprioritization of regional bulk infrastructure grant. Fourthly, the urban settlement development grant, which we supported as NDMC, and from the Department of Transport, the public transport network grant, as well as the public transport operations grant. I'm mentioning this in order to reflect that there's a suite of funding that is available. What is important is to ensure a coordinated implementation of those funding streams so that they can make the necessary impact at local level. It is against this backdrop that the district development model approach becomes a very critical vehicle to make sure that all these funds are coordinated and they are made to be fit for purpose for the needs of our localities. That's the first one in terms of the grant. The second one relates to the issue of homeless shelters, compliance with homeless shelters matters by municipalities. We take note of the issues raised by Honorable Hatter, and we will engage through the Disaster Operations Center. We'll engage with the province and the municipality to establish the details regarding the matter so that there can be a clarification as to what needs to happen. Then the last issue, Honorable Chair and members, is about compliance issues with regulations. I think from my side, just to state that at technical level, the arrangements that exist at the national level in terms of the compliance and enforcement mechanism through the security cluster, which cascades at provincial and municipal level, should actually be the mechanism that helps to ensure that there's compliance with regulations. And we will continue to instill this understanding as we engage with provinces and municipalities on this matter. But we know that compliance starts off with the issue of promotion of understanding, raising of awareness to encourage people to understand the significance of respecting the directions as well as regulations. So I think the lesson for us here is we need to strengthen the issue of advocacy, awareness, to ensure that our communities comply, and the role of our local councillors and other role players on at the municipal level becomes very critical. So those are the three issues that I thought I could just address from my side, and the leadership will also conclude. Thank you very much.
Chairperson?
Before you proceed, Honorable, when the leadership concludes, Dr. Dawu, do we hear you saying that you don't know the details of the Cape Town chapter as the Disaster Management Center? Is what you are saying?
Personally, I've not yet received the details regarding the closure of that particular shelter. It might have been escalated, so I haven't received it, and I'll appreciate getting the details so that we can work on it. Yes, I've not received it personally.
Honorable Chair,
it's you.
Yes,
Honorable Hatem.
You know that, yes, Chair. That's very unfortunate, Chair, because the matter was broadcast in all media platforms. I do not know how come the department missed such a grave offense. It's very worrying and disturbing, Chair, and I would really appreciate if an urgent follow-up can be undertaken. We cannot be seen tolerating an open defiance as if we are in a federal state as a country. South Africa is a unitary state. Therefore, all regulation passed nationally ought to be embraced and enforced by all spheres of government involved, Chair. I am very concerned that the department had not seen such an unfortunate situation. Thank you.
Honorable Chair.
Yes.
Traditional Affairs, Honorable Chair, if I could just make a comment with your permission on the comment issues raised in relation to religious gatherings. With your permission, Chairperson.
Proceed, Didi.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think in terms of the...
Put the camera on before.
I have put my camera on. I don't know what is happening with my system.
Not on. Make it on.
I'm trying to fidget with the settings here. I don't know what might be the problem. Well, it still doesn't seem to be showing, Chairperson. My apologies. I don't know what might be happening. In on the system here, I've tried to put the camera on, but it doesn't show anything, unfortunately.
Introduce yourself first, then you can talk.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Mashwa Sedipofa, the Director General of the Department of Traditional Affairs. Just a comment on the issues that relate to religious gatherings, just to indicate to the Honorable Members that the Level 3 regulations, Regulation 34, which talks about religious gatherings, that regulation also says that what happens in those gatherings should be in line with the directions that will be issued by the cabinet member responsible. So in this case, the cabinet member responsible, being the Minister of COGTA, has issued directions. So some of the issues that the honorable members are raising, just to indicate that the directions actually elaborate a little bit more. So for example, the issue about, are you talking about several buildings in one place? Actually, the directions themselves define what a premise means, or a place of religious worship means. So irrespective of the size and the number of buildings, if people enter what is designated as a place of worship, irrespective of the number of buildings in that place of worship for that church, the limits that have been specified in the regulations of 50 will still apply, and that is elaborated upon in the directions. And I think it relates also to the issue that the Honorable Mamkiza raised about the length of the service. Can the service take place the whole day in the directions themselves? That has been elaborated on. It's been specified to say it's a two-hour service. It might be that there might be a break and there might be another service later, but a service duration is specified as 2 hours in the directions that were issued by the minister. I just thought I should just add those two specific issues relating to religious gatherings, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Okay.
If I can come in, Chairperson.
Honorable Kunervat.
Chairperson, thank you. Just in terms of the answer that the DG just gave us, one thing he didn't touch on was the question if a marriage in the church can happen now, or in terms of level three, or can't it just happen, or let me rephrase, can a marriage happen within a church now in terms of level three, or can't it?
Honorable Chairperson, if I may come in, I think the directions themselves do not specify the nature of the services, because if a religious service involves a marriage in a church, the necessary specifications that have been put in place and the necessary restrictions that have been put in place around the religious gathering which might involve a marriage, those will still apply. So the issue is not so much about determining the nature of the religious service, because that is not necessarily for government to determine, but to make sure that whatever happens, the restrictions that have been determined are still adhered to at all times.
before the ministers come in, there is an issue that we feel it was not adequately responded to. The issue raised by Honorable Opperman. We got a presentation from SALGA with regard to the physical response to municipalities. And then there was an example of a municipality in the Western Cape called Hantam that SALGA made a presentation on to say that out of this 150 million that has been allocated to municipalities, Hantam municipalities was allocated 21,000 with the 175,820 per month cost for PPE for councillors and municipal staff. And then we were talking, we were raising the issue around the allocation to say then where will the rest of the money come from? I didn't hear any of the administrators when they were responding addressing this issue because it's an area for concern because the total cost for providing PPE per employee per month is 1,180. So for the 9 councillors and the staff, if the municipality it cut across the country, then we understand the issue of the reallocation and all those things because the other issue, we are now on day 63, 64 of the disaster. To say then if money is not released and then you are waiting for the normal DORA issue to happen, what happens in between now for the municipalities to fully respond? I didn't hear it coming clear unless, except for the reprioritization and all those kind of things, because with the disaster, the money has to be made immediate. Secondly, the issues as raised by a Honorable Hadewe, Dr. Tau, to you in particular. We expect you as a, South Africa is not a federal state, I must say that. We expect you to be in the known of everything. That's why then you are the National Disaster Management Center. So the issue of Strandfontein, it has been on papers, it has been everywhere. There's been issues around that. And then for you to come in this platform, you tell us you are not aware as to what is happening. Let's be realistic. That's the concern of the members to say, something is not right here. There has to be clarity on these matters. Back to you before the minister comes in. Tim Deacock. DG.
Sorry, Chairperson, we'll ask Dr. Tao to just deal with the disaster relief question that was tabled.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Chair, on the issue of Hantam, as with other municipalities that are may have received an amount lower than what they would have expected. I have just indicated that the disaster relief grant by its design and its allocation, it is meant to top up to what will have been reprioritized from various sources. The figure that has been allocated is what we could be able to make available, but we should read it in the context of the other funds that have been reprioritized. Hence, I would like to submit that the issue of working within the district development model as the arrangement that is currently coming into place will help us to ensure that we mobilize, galvanize, and put all resources together to deal with the needs where there are gaps fill all the gaps that may still be existing in terms of resource allocation. So that is how I see it being done, because currently the remaining amount is very little, and I accept if there can be engagement with Treasury. I am not in a position to commit that there's any additional money that can be made available from the disaster relief grant. I take note of the honourable member's concern, which is very genuine, on the question of Strandfontein. And yes, Strandfontein, and we will attend to that, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Okay. Minister, over to you.
Thank you very much. Maybe I'll ask the DMs and then I'll come last. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Okay, DM.
Thank you very much once again, Chairperson and Honorable Members. Good evening, and good evening to the Minister, Deputy Minister, Mbapele, and colleagues. Cognizant of your time, I think the bulk of the issues have been raised by the officials or commented on by the officials, so I'll just make a few quick comments. The first is that with regards to electricity tariffs, it is important to keep at the back of our minds that municipalities make tariff decisions, particularly with regards to electricity, and make an application to the regulator, which is the National Electricity Regulator of South Africa, about on the tariff, which is the body authorized to approve the tariff. So in essence, as COCTA, we are not the regulating authority with regards to tariff. Ours is to provide support to municipalities to the extent that this is necessary and important. However, the actual tariff approval is the responsibility of the National Electricity Regulator. Indeed, there is a formula that the regulator applies to determining tariffs, and to the best of my knowledge and recollection, it is not accommodating that municipalities should have an increase of 80% or anything of that nature. But I think it would be best placed for the electricity regulator to present its formulae for determining tariffs and for approving tariffs as applied for by the respective municipalities. The second point relates to picking up on the matter on hand term that was raised. I think it's also important to keep at the back of our minds that the disaster relief grant is a grant that essentially is no more than 150 million plus minus. And that given the COVID crisis that we are facing, we took a conscious decision to use the equitable share formula, because unlike disasters that we deal with from time to time, the COVID pandemic is a disaster that affects virtually all parts of the country. And instead of waiting for municipalities to apply for the disaster relief grant, we thought it would be appropriate to, on the basis of what was appropriated, to use the equitable share formula to disperse the disaster relief grant, the municipal disaster relief grant in particular. That, of course, using the equitable share formula means that you can only apply it to the extent that the formula works. And the point around hand term has been raised on various occasions. And the point that we continue to make is that the equitable share formula was the immediately available mechanism of dispersing this particular grant, which is the disaster relief grant. That does not mean that there aren't other resources that are directed at local government. This would include the stimulus package as announced by the president, of the 20 billion, which we are still working on the allocation criteria on that, and we'll be able to make announcements. and other mechanisms that we have looked at. So I think it's important to keep that at the back of our minds when we engage with how we related to the municipal disaster relief grant in particular, because that was a limited amount that we had to disperse at that point. I think, Chair, cognizant of your time, maybe I should leave it there. Thank you very much.
Okay. PM Bapela.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a few items. One, to take up on what the DG DTA raised around the religious guidelines or directives. Obviously, a marriage ceremony element will only be when the priest says, "I therefore declare you husband and wife, as you always know, and bless the marriage." However, the marriage as an activity has cultural aspects in it. There's a celebratory aspect of it. They are still outlawed or prohibited. So all those particular functions is except that particular religious element. So it does not mean therefore marriages are open and cultural activities are open. They are not yet open as yet in level 3. So they are still restricted, except wife, husband and wife so decides to go before the priest and say, declare us husband and wife after the ceremony by the priest itself. So obviously that is a religious activity in a church within those particular norms and standards that the DG has said. There was another issue by Honorable Hrene about around the issue of the municipalities that do not comply, and some of the municipalities, their websites are not as functional or up to date. And one of the municipalities with a 2014 website, which was last been alive. Obviously, those will be the hard-pressed municipality financially, those municipalities that are financially distressed, and obviously whatever little money that goes into those municipalities. And with COVID pressures also coming in, their priorities will then go to the most needy areas of responding to the service delivery. But obviously the report did come to the portfolio that indeed we have a group of municipalities that are going through their own financial services. So this obvious area will only be improved once those financial situations improve, and obviously the holistic service provision, including the website being updated, will then go with the resource improving. But with the COVID as it is now, the revenue going to be affected. It will then mean that quite a number of other administrative functions of the municipalities will then suffer. And I think let's take it in that context that indeed there is this situation on the state of municipalities. Then the last one, Chair, was the issue around the municipalities during the initial disaster declaration that they must continue to function in a accountable way with all oversights happening by the councils themselves on the ESCO and then on the administration itself, so that indeed accountability and oversight remains the anchor of ensuring that our democratic order remains sane, but also as Honorable Hadebe was saying, including on any procurement that happens, those committees that ought to be doing oversight on such activities should be alive and then ensure that they continue, and will then have to look at this issue if indeed municipalities are no longer effecting their oversight functions. Will then have to engage on it as COCTA and the provincial COCTAs to ensure therefore that they adhere to the mandates of their role as municipalities. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay.
Chairperson, Zimba here. Chair, can I answer, Chair, on the questions that were raised in relation to the implementation of
infrastructure projects. With your permission, sir.
The CEO of MISA.
CEO of MISA, yes, Chairperson.
Yes, come in.
Thanks, sir. There was a question raised around the slow implementation of the project, Chairperson.
Can you go back? We're only seeing your ears. Yes, that's better.
You can see me now, Chair.
Yes.
Thanks, Chairperson. I was saying, Chairperson, obviously, Chairperson, the construction sector was also severely affected by the implementation of the lockdown, and this impacted on the implementation of the project.
They can't see project. Your face. They can't see your face.
Now, how is it, Chairperson?
Yes. Please put that.
Thanks, Chairperson. I was saying, Chair, we did indeed experience a slowdown in terms of the implementation of infrastructure projects, Chairperson, mainly, of course, because of the fact that the construction sector was also affected by the lockdown. However, through the gradual easing of the restrictions at level 4, Chairperson, many of the sector started to operate, Chairperson, and as well as Chairperson, we missed the emergency water projects were gradually being implemented. And also, Chairperson, in terms of the reprioritization of MIG, you will recall that we approved the reprioritization of MIG in May, and many municipalities have been supported, and some are being supported now by MISA and other sector departments, Chairperson, to finalize the registration of projects on MSI on the MIG-MIS, Chairperson. And currently, some municipalities have started implementation of the emergency water measures, Chairperson. And the hardware, Chairperson, which were also affected by the lockdown regulations, started opening, Chairperson, as well during level 4. And many of the projects which were slow, in particular as it relates to the installation of tanks, Chairperson, we've now seen a move in terms of ramping up of the implementation of the installation of the water tanks, Chairperson. For instance, currently, Chairperson, over 14,000 tanks are now in use out of 19,000 tanks that have been distributed in municipalities. Mm. Due to the work that has been done to ramp up the implementation, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Minister, you have the remaining 11 minutes to talk to all these issues as related.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members, for all the issues raised. I think most of them have been responded to. But I just want to stress that indeed I hope the municipalities, the councillors, the councils must meet now and they should get the report. And if we have to send a circular reminding them, and also the suggestion of putting the expenditures in the website. I don't think there's a problem with doing that. We'll attend to that. Then the question of regulations. I just want to say, you know, this issue is something that everyone is dealing with for the first time in this country, at least in 100 years. And the regulations that we put out, we get advice also from sector departments. If I were to use an example, the issue of children and their movement, were advised by social development. And when we asked about the courts and the family advocate and all that, they said it comes from the child from their child care laws. So some of them, we as I say, were advised, and we have to then put them as per advice. But we also accept that in some instances, my lens is not showing. In some instances, we have realized that there are gaps.
Sister, you realized that.
Yes, I realized. So I've in some instances, we realized that there were gaps in the regulations, or regulations were difficult and there were issues, and we have been amending them as we go along, because there is no knowledge of how we could deal with this pandemic. For instance, I'll make one example so that I don't waste time. When there was the issue of people who need to move residence or business office or business premises from one province to the other, we had to amend so that that is allowed, because it's a gap that had been not foreseen. So and we've always said when the regulations are published that it's a live document and it's not cast in stone, because there may be issues that may arise. For instance, in the lockdown 21 days, the first 21 days, there was a very strict prohibition of movement between provinces, except cargo and so on. And then we quickly realized that the way our communities are structured is that some people may be working in Joburg and want to be buried in KZN or in the Eastern Cape. And we had to amend the regulations to make sure that that is catered for. So I'm not saying the regulations are perfect. They can't be perfect. But we've been, as we go along, try to accommodate whatever issue that has arisen that may not have been foreseen. And then I think the issues of VAT and so on have been attended to. In terms of the daycare centers, I assume that it's the ECD. I'm not sure whether that's what the member meant, because in terms of care, right from level 5, the regulations accommodated care services for the elderly, for the mentally ill, for people with disability, for children, and so on. But if the member means ECDs, the Department of Education and Department of Social Welfare have not concluded the issue of when the ECDs will open. And that's why we couldn't put it in the regulation. So, but this matter has been discussed with the relevant departments about what is happening in the ECDs, and we know that they said they are still consulting on the matter, and they will come back to us. On the question of, I'm just trying to go through those that were not responded to. On the question of evictions, the formulation that is in the regulations, the initial formulation was a response to, again, people calling us and saying they are being evicted under lockdown, the first 21 days. They can't even look for accommodation. They are not supposed to move, and therefore, nobody was supposed to evict anyone, because nobody was supposed to be moving and looking for accommodation or whatever. And we put that, but we amended the regulation. As I said, we've been amending it as we've been going along when problems arise. But then justice. said no, that formulation after the 21 days should be revised so that it gives the courts the issue to deal with those issues. So that's why the formulation is in the way it is. And then I also want to deal with the issue of the homeless people. We did hear about it, and the mayor of Cape Town said that they closed the big shelter, and they were moving people to smaller shelters, and some of them didn't want it to be moved to smaller shelters. So we have said to the mayor, no, people must be put in shelters. And he did say that maybe it was a mistake to close that big shelter that they closed. And I said that we must make sure that everybody is in a shelter. And he said he'll give me a full report on Monday, because they are going to try and make sure that people are in shelters. That's what I can say for now on that one. On the issue raised, I think, by Honorable Mkhalipi about why you are rushing to open all levels, I think right at the beginning I did explain that the issue is that we are in a very difficult situation in South Africa. When COVID came, our economy was not good. Our unemployment was already high. And then in the middle of COVID, we were downgraded by the rating agencies. And then COVID lockdown meant that a lot of people did not have work. And we know that the majority of our people don't have savings, where if they are not working for a month or two, they can dip on those savings. That's why the president had to come up with that package to try and augment. But the reality was that lots of people didn't have a livelihood. That is why every time we stress that actually, if we were in a good position, according to WHO, we should only be opening when the figures are going down. But in our case, the figures are going up. But it's to balance saving lives and livelihoods so that people are not killed by hunger rather than when we're trying to save them from COVID. So it's not an easy issue. It's a very difficult issue, because we know that, yes, employers have been given very strict directions of how to try and prevent COVID from spreading in the workplace, but that does not guarantee that it will not happen. But of course, if there are places where the COVID-19 spreads in the workplace, that workplace gets closed, and the people who have got COVID, then they they are treated and the contacts are traced. But quite a number, even the essential services like grocery shops, some of them had to close. Some of them, even filling stations and others, have had to close because of that. So it's a very difficult situation to balance livelihoods and saving lives. But that's really the reason. There's no one who's rushing to kill black people. There's no government in South Africa, democratic government, that can actually want to kill people. I think it's an unfortunate way of putting it. it is a difficult situation, I must say. But and then there was a question about hospital, Edington Hospital, and whether as COPTA were able to go everywhere across the country to see all these places. Let me say upfront, we just don't have that capacity. We rely on the ministers and the department concerned. But what at the end of the, before the end of the financial year, there was money in the disaster fund that was sent to the provinces for health to try and start dealing with some of the difficulties in health. I think that amount, Dr. Dau will correct me if I'm wrong, was 466 million that we had, and CCC then said we must give all that to health right at the beginning of this pandemic, which we did. Now, we will report what is being said here to the different sector departments, and we will report even about Edmonton Hospital. I know the hospital very well, but I've not been to it recently, so I don't know what the position, and we will report what Honorable Mkalipe said about the condition of the hospital. I also just want to correct one thing, that the NCCC is not chaired by the Minister of Culture, it's chaired by the President, the Command Council, just for the record. It's... Now, the question of alcohol, it's also a difficult one, because indeed we know that the hospitals, especially the emergency services, the emergency units, and the ICUs, the beds have been freed that would have otherwise, as the Honorable Member says, be occupied by people who are injured, short, step hearts, and all those things. But the NCCC considered what was coming from all and that is why in the regulations we had to put some restrictions of that. If you recall, even before the actual lockdown, in the first phase, they were restricted to, they could, taverns and shebeens could open but close at a particular time. This time, we have tried to limit by saying the number of days that alcohol can be sold is only 4 days, but also only between 9 and 5, but also only for takeaway. Shebeens and taverns can't just open and people sit down and drink. But it is a difficult one, and we will be monitoring it very closely, what happens. And we will report back some of these issues that have been raised here. And then the opening of churches. Again, in society, some have been saying churches must be opened. Some are saying, why are churches being opened? And again, it is a difficult one. And it's not saying people must go to church. It's just giving the option. As you can see, some of the churches have already said no, they won't take that option. They will remain closed. So it's not like saying people, everyone must now go to church. It's just an option. And it's got very strict conditions. And the timelines are there. Maybe they are too long, I don't know, but the timeline is 2 hours, but that no service must go on for more than 2 hours. And also, we're not aware that there is a church that has many church areas of worship in the same premise. So what is allowed is that you can have more than one service if you so wish, but the service, the 150 group of people must have their service and leave, and then you can have another service. But this thing of different buildings, no, is not catered for. What else? And then on the question of the people who responded to the consultation, the people who responded, you'll recall that the consultation was sent out, I think, on the 25th, and the closing date was the 27th, and the gazetting date was the 29th. So we received the comments, and I was hoping that Dr. Tau was going to comment on this, because it was his team that was dealing with these responses. So the responses that we got were over 2,000. And those responses, we were just, because the time was that so short, we got the responses, and that's what we were informed when Dr. Tau and his team looked at the responses. Now, we put those responses on a spreadsheet to the lawyers, but the lawyers said no, they want each email. So the team sent the emails, but the lawyers said they will look and see whether there are duplications or not. So I'm not sure how many actually they published in the court papers, but the emails are there. And I think, as I say, I was hoping that Dr. Tau would respond, because it was his team who was working on those. We did not go out to mislead South Africans. What else? I think the other issues have been responded to by either the officials or the DMs. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Hussein, Chair, please.
You must be, I'm giving you a minute each. We need to close this meeting. No? Don't make preambles. Follow up on your questions. Okay? Can we start with Mkalipi, followed by Hunervald, then Hussein, and Hadere, in that order?
Thank you very much, Chair. I won't waste any time. Thank you, Minister, for responding, especially on editing issue, because it's a cause for concern, and the workers are being victimized during the COVID. Thanks very much. I hope the Minister of Health will take it up and resolve the issue very fast. Minister, I think you should comment on the issue I raised regarding the disaster management. I even give a contest to it to say that SASSA has stopped food parcels, social development does not have any programs, ukulekelela abantu abangathathentweni, the COVID-19 350 rand is not yet processed, abantu babhuqwa indlala. The only option thina-ke under our department is this disaster management, abangazama abantu ukuthi at least every day balale bedlile. But now it was confirmed and reported officially here ukuthi many municipalities, they don't have money. So we have contributed, even ourselves here as members of parliament, to Solidarity Fund. Can that money go and also empower disaster management at lower level in order to intervene to such disaster that is happening to our people? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, I will be quick as well. Thank you for the Minister and the Department's responses and the DMs. But just two things that wasn't touched on, which I want to ask the Minister if she will be able to follow up. The one is in terms of daycare centres. That's not usually classified under early childhood development. If so, it must just be stated so. If she can maybe talk to the Minister of Education and just ask to clarify that in terms of the regulations. And then in terms of grade ones and twos, the omission that was in terms of the act that the Minister of Education given out today, if they can just be the Minister can just clarify us in terms of grade one and two that isn't even included in the act, if she can maybe then just ask the Minister of Education to include that in the regulation, because I think it was only an omission. That's the only two things. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Hadebis.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think the question that I had posed and requested a detailed report in relation to municipalities that are struggling to hold the virtual meetings, and those that have successfully held the virtual meetings, so that we are able to effect our oversight. We don't want municipalities to use COVID-19 and the state of the national disaster as an excuse for not holding meetings. So if we can get assistance in that regard. And lastly, Chair, the municipalities, the 90% of municipalities that were able to pass their budget and IDP, and those that are still outstanding. That information will assist us, Chair, in making a follow-up into those that have not yet thus far comply with the regulations and the legislation. Thank you.
Honorable Hussein.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I appreciate the response from the Minister in respect of the 2,000 emails that she explained, and I take it that at the time when she made the announcement that there were 2,000 objections, that she had inadvertently done so based on the information that she had received. So, I accept that explanation. What I want to find out from her, may I just say that that is then obviously now a correction, that at the time that the Minister made the announcement that there were 2,000 objections to the unbanning of the cigarettes announced by the President, that actually there was no 2,000 objections, now that she's discovered it later on. What I would like to...
Then you're putting words in their mouth now.
No, I'm giving an opportunity just to clarify that, because that's essentially what she said, that Dr.
I'm sorry to interject you, Honorable Hussein. You must also be mindful that these are the matters that are being ventilated in court.
No, I understand. I understand, Chairperson, and I'm cautious about that, but there's nothing that I'm suggesting that is not already in the public domain, and I'm now responding to the comments made by the Minister. And I accept a version of it. I mean, I can understand that at the time the things were moving with speed, and I think the Minister has been fair in her response to us, and that these things do happen under the circumstances. So I'm not being critical of it. I do appreciate that at the time there was that situation that we that needed to be dealt with. I just needed to clarify that. And if it's an error, Chairperson, that was made, then, you know, I think that we must just be honest about these errors that happened. I want to just ask, Chairperson, that if the Minister can maybe just give an indication at which stage of the regulations, the lockdown regulations, does she intend to uplift the ban on the trade of cigarettes and tobacco products? Thank you very much, Chair.
Yeah, it's all the way. I mean,
you.
Yes,
that's
yes. Mischievous.
Yes, we know that. Why?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a fair question. You know, I think you know, people are tired of buying illegal cigarettes, you know.
He's speaking on his behalf and his constituency. We know that.
There are 11 million of us, Chairperson, so I think...
I know. Okay.
It's a fair question.
Yeah. Okay. I think that covers... Hadebe, you've already spoken, eh? Yes. Hadebe.
Yes, Chair. No, I'm covered. Thank you, Chair.
Minister... On my part, as we are heading towards the closure, there is this solidarity fund, and our understanding that it's meant to respond to the disaster. Is there any indication when is the National Disaster Management Center going to have access to this fund? What's wrong, Clever?
I'm sorry to interject. I think it's my network somehow. I thought that you had seen my hand raised. Chair.
Okay. Can I finish up? Then you will come after.
Very, very, very brief.
Sure. And so there are network issues because you are breaking again. Okay. If you are ready, proceed. Proceed, Desa.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your generosity, Chair. I wanted to raise the issue of hotspot areas in municipalities to the Minister, because I think that those areas should be reported to the committee in terms of how many did the municipality establish, because there is an area that has not received potable water since the lockdown period in Dr. J.S. Muroka, from Ward 26 to Ward 31. They have not been receiving water at all. That means that there's a high risk of health in terms of the contamination of the virus in that area. So I would add that the water tankers, because what is happening, Chair, the water tankers that are within the that area only serve the that area called Siyabuswa, even though the dam is next to Loding there, where there is no water, and some of the tankers that are there are in areas where there is already running water. Thank you very much, Chair.
Yes, you interjected me while I was still asking the Minister with regard to the issue of the solidarity fund, the disaster solidarity fund money. Because then, as DM Tau and Dr. Tau has indicated, that 150 million that is already depleted. How about then, how does the National Disaster Management Center then is able to access this money from the Solidarity Fund? What is the discussion around that? And then the other issue, Honorable Opperman asked me whether the table of essential services is going to be amended to reflect what you said, Minister, about categorizing religious counseling as an essential service. And then she wants to know, if yes, when is it going to happen? Over to you, Minister.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with Honorable Hussein. Honorable Hussein, what I will do, there were 2,000, I've just checked with the team. They say there were 2,060 emails that objected. What we will have to do is to check whether some of them were duplications. So we'll have to check how many of the were duplications. So don't put words in my mouth that I'm saying there were 400 cases. No. The emails that arrived that we can produce. But whether some of them were duplications is the question. And of course, he knows that I can't answer the second question that he asked about tobacco. He knows it as he's asking the question, that it's a question that I cannot answer. Honorable Kadipe, in terms of SASSA, I will also take this matter to the Minister of Social Development to check whether, because I wasn't aware that SASSA cannot or is not anymore giving any food parcels. I will talk to her and see, and I will also talk, which will cover two questions. I'll also talk to the chair of the Corona Solidarity Fund, because I know some of the things they were doing was in part to give out food parcels. And at a discussion I had with her earlier, she was saying that they besides giving food parcels, they also want to see if they can assist people with seeds and all that so that they can also plant some of the food. But I will talk to her again and hear where they are. But she was saying that, of course, they have to raise money and use it and raise money. So I'll go to her again and I will check where things are and whether they can help where there are people who really need food parcels, because they were doing that at the beginning, so I don't know where things are now. In terms of water and water tankers, as you would recall, that the Minister of Water and Sanitation did announce that they are centralizing the issue of the water, distributing the tank, both the JoJo tanks and the water tankers that will fill the JoJo tanks with water. Now, you have, the Honorable Member has said that in JS Morocco, I will then follow up with that. At Ward 26, the 26 to 31, I think I heard him say. So I will follow up with that.
Yes.
Okay, I will follow up with the minister and she can then check on that. I will also talk to the Minister of Basic Education about the issues that Honorable Groenewald has raised. The last issue about essential services, for the counseling, the some of the religious leaders, when the president was consulting them, did say they have counseling services in their churches, not all of them, but they did say they have counseling services that they would like to utilize. And so the NCCC then agreed that they can use those counseling services. The classification of essential services for now is not necessary because a lot of things have been opened. It's not only essential services, it's only at level 5 where only essential services were open. But now a lot more things have been open. So they will be operating in terms of giving those counseling services. And the regulation says so, but if you look at level 3, it does not talk about which services are essential, which ones are not, because it talks about all services that are allowed in level 3. Is there anyone that I left out? I think that's where I'll end, Chair.
Yeah, you have responded to almost everything. To the team, DCOP team, the ones that wanted to present on 139, we want to apologize that that cannot proceed. If you check, you have already also taken Parliament's time over 27 minutes as we speak. Then what we'll need to do, this was very important because it's the current aspect of our work. And then we've also realized the idea of scheduling 2 presentations at a time, it doesn't work. So it means more work to the committee members. We'll try to find a slot waiting that we can come and deal with the intervention, because I know that's another aspect that interests members. On its own, I think we might also need 5 to 6 hours to deal with interventions in municipalities. So that's the issue. But Minister, we want to thank you with the team for making your time and being with us. I've always said that whenever the Minister is available, she will attend our committee meetings. And we are mindful of the fact that you are the lead state department that is dealing with the National Disaster Management Act. Regulations time and again, meetings after meeting, because at the end of the day, you are the lead department that must also put all these regulations in place and make them that they're meaningful. But we should appreciate the work, as I said earlier, that you are doing, leading the team. And then as you indicated, that we can bank on our support as a committee. And then we appreciate the fact that you're going to come and brief us time and again prior to transition to the next level of the lockdown. That's where you also have then, please, I need to thank, before I adjourn the meeting, as the practice and the norm, I need to confirm in this meeting, it's Honorable Mediko who got cut. I think it was, but she's around, she's back. It's Honorable Becky Hatewe, Honorable Kesa, Honorable Hussein, Honorable Pritika Banchaba, Honorable Mukalipi, Honorable Gisela Oberman, Honorable Lutuli, Honorable Honevald, and Honorable Hussein. Did I omit anyone? The only apology that was recorded.
Okay, Chairperson, you didn't.
Was the apology. Yes. The only apology that was recorded was the apology of Honorable Minister and Deputy Ministers and Team Cook and DTA. Including the Minister CEO, who want to thank you for your time this Friday. So I think it was a fruitful engagement. We're looking forward to further engagement of this nature. Then the meeting gets adjourned. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see each other next week, colleagues.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Madam.
Bye.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Brian.
Bye-bye.
Honourable Mkalipu Nkonzelekhaya. If I may ask for your indulgence, is it possible to get a fair notice of a portfolio committee meeting?
Yes.
I was just saying, is it possible to get some lead time to the portfolio committee meeting? Because sometimes you just get told and then you already have other NCCC and all that I can't pull out of. Whereas if I know in advance, I can also ask if NCCC can be changed. If I know in advance, but sometimes it's just tomorrow, where possible, if you can give us a good lead time.
Okay, that's in terms of the computer secretary will do that because we are also dependent on Parliament giving us the slot. But we have since submitted our program for up to, I think, end of the term. So we'll endeavor to stick to that. That program has been shared, then I think what the committee manager is also in the room that we get the appropriate slot so that then the minister will make time. Like, yes, yesterday you were, but already there were meetings, everything that you had already scheduled. That's your frustration. I think we'll endeavor to do that, Minister, so that it cannot be seen that you don't want to attend meetings. We know when you are available, you attend meetings. And when you can't, normally you are sending all the two deputies, and they've been very consistent in attendance of the meetings. Like yesterday, DM Tau even left the meeting. He was with you in to come to the support the officials. Same thing, I think DM Mapela left, came a bit after DM Tau, but they were all in the meeting. We'll try to make sure that you get the time, but when not possible, because we must also understand the work that you are doing. Currently now, you are the lead minister. No meeting will proceed in your absence. So basically, that's what we'll do. Endeavor will have to also, yes, be in constant communication with the ministry office to that effect. Once they get allocated.
Yeah.
You are losing you. Thank you very much, Chair. The DMs have been great, I must say.
They've really been great. I mean, one of them, even the one that's holding Umpopo Wako Mukuluma, he's very great as well.
What? No, the two DMs.